All right, everybody, this clock is right now, at least for a couple of days. So. We're on number 7, and it's coming around if you don't have it. I sent it out earlier. I actually sent it out twice, because I made a little error on one of them. So. But if you got that one, it's fine. It's just like one word, but it kind of changes everything. So we're going to talk about, we're going to get kind of, down to cases, kind of down to specifics now. We'll talk about discipline. In within this theme that I'm kind of promoting of raising passionate children, children that are passionate for Jesus. And I think it starts with discipline, and obviously there's more to come on that, but that's what we're going to do tonight. So, Rich, would you do this in order for us? Okay, in just a minute we'll read some Proverbs and some other scriptures in here, but I want to read this quote from Dallas Willard on the top of the page here. It says, Jesus does not call us simply to do what he did, but to be as he was. What we do then becomes a natural expression of who we are in him. Number one, do you agree with that? And if so, then what do you think he's getting at? Why is it so important if obviously, I gave away what I think that I agree, but you are obviously free to disagree. But assuming you agree, why is it important? Jack?
If somebody was trying to make a point on the first half, they might cite how Jesus revisited a lot of the commandments and kind of stepped it up, which to me is tied into, okay, you do what I say, but is the difference between doing what I say and being what I am the same way? There's a difference of not killing and not, you know, wanting to kill your brother in your mind or that kind of
thing. Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's a matter of the heart, right?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. If somebody were going to argue that, then I think that would be a good evidence that Jesus was thinking that way and also taught that way.
Okay. I like that. What else? Anybody else have a thought on that? Not just simply to do what he did, but to be as he was. And then what we do grows out of who we are in him. Some of you are here for the Tuesday class, right?
Well, an analogy, Jack, because he's the...
Whoa, the analogy king is being bypassed.
But I've been wearing contacts probably for about 10 years, and now I'm not wearing them anymore. Mm-hmm. But every morning I get up and I'm kind of looking to put my contacts in, or every night I go, oh, right, I don't have contact. So it was who I was and who I became, and so it was just my nature to be trained that way. So if we're doing what Christ is and who he is, it becomes second nature to us, and we don't have to think about it, we just do it.
Okay. Right. Like that. Lisa?
Yeah, I do. Is it... we're a big influence, and our children will learn from mom and dad. I do know that they're going to learn from us.
From what they hear us say, or from what they see us do?
Well, and our example is has a strong effect on our children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course we have an influence on them, and it's a profound influence. Actually, they are the most parents are the most important influence in a child's life, regardless of what you think, at all points in a child's life. Excellent.
We've talked a lot about that "fake it till you make it" phrase,
mm-hmm.
And then kind of in correlation with that, when your kids are small and you're telling them, what do you say, every single time. When they're, you know, 11 months old and they don't necessarily get it, But the point is that the more that they grow and the more that we're teaching them, what we're trying to do is teach them to be thankful from the inside. So then saying thank you is not a problem, much like it's in your nature to be thankful because you've been taught from a young age that that's what we should be. And when they're little and when we work at it and when we do all these things, sometimes it doesn't completely jive. But at some point, if you fake it, which hopefully you don't have to do for very long, it becomes, you get closer to God, you get closer to, you know Jesus better, the more you study, the more you do, the more you come to services, the more you are around people who want to serve God, the more it becomes a part of you, rather than just, I'm going to church 3 times a week just because I should be.
Yeah, right. take the thanks thing, because we want our kids to say the magic words, right? So please and thank you, and we used to call them as magic words, but we also said, used to say, put your thinking cap on. But if you get them to, you discipline them to say thanks, and you try, it takes a lot of energy, but you try to do that every time there's a situation in which they should, right? You tell them to do it. Eventually, you want that to become a habit, right? You want that to be habitual for them, but is that the end of it? You want them to be thankful. That's what you're aiming at, right? You want them to actually be thankful. So that now it comes out naturally from who they become. They become a thankful child. That's not true in the beginning when you're making them say thank you. That they're selfish. Kids are selfish. I mean, naturally. David? Or David, right? Yeah. Go ahead.
I guess it's moving beyond just what Jesus did, but doing what he did for the reasons that he did. So it's the why.
Right.
That seems like that's come up in here. Other people have said that. You've got to understand why we do what we do, not just do it. And I think that maybe that's what we're trying to instill in our kids, is an understanding of why we want them to do certain things and what the mindset is supposed to be about, and have that mindset so that they make good decisions. Not just go and do the things, but understand why you do them. So the thankfulness is a really good example. It starts with us just getting them to say thank you. It's kind of a habit. But eventually we want them to understand why you do that, and what the reasons are behind it, and how it changes the dynamic, and how it helps you, and how it helps the other person, and all those other things.
Yeah. You know that we haven't said, I mean, you've heard me say this before, we're not just trying to get them to do good, we want them to prefer the good. That's the goal, that's what we're trying to get them. Brett, did you hear?
Is Amy Kane here? She uses this phrase, I use this phrase all the time, it's from some silly movie, I think, with Jennifer Aniston. I use it on my kids. I want you to want to do the dishes. That's what we always say. And I remember my dad saying, don't just do it because I told you to.
Yeah.
Because you know it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
It's very easy to mimic physical behavior. You see little kids mimicking behavior all the time.
Yeah.
Because it's fun.
Right.
But I think what Christ wants us to do, today's point, is to do it because the motivation is righteous.
Yeah. He wants us to imitate him, not just to do. Okay, Kyle and then Tim.
Along the lines of what they both just said, I think that kind of gets to the heart of Jesus' whole message. It's because it's about not just doing it, but it's about the heart and what you want to do. And what came to my mind was when we talk a lot of times when we talk about the plan of salvation and baptism versus like a faith-only kind of an idea, and the whole concept of being baptized, the argument against it is it's a work, it's not, works don't save you. But when we talk about that, it's because of the faith that we have and the belief that we have in God and Christ, and that faith causes us to take that action. It's not that we're doing the action just because we're mimicking or doing it because we're told we need to do that. But it's that inside from the heart that causes us to do it.
And if we don't do it from the heart, it's probably not doing good, right? Yeah. Tim?
Well, and my point piggybacks right off of that is that one of the main reasons we do these things is supposed to be out of love. Mm-hmm. 1 Corinthians mentions, you know, you can do all these great things, prophecy and move mountains with your faith and everything, but without love, it's nothing.
It profits you nothing.
And that's also where this needs to come. Our love for Christ and our love for others should compel us to do these things that will show our love and our thankfulness and everything. But I think that's where it comes from.
Yeah, Paul said the love of Christ constrains us or compels us in 2 Corinthians 5:14. I think that's right. Okay, so what we're going to do, so really it starts with discipline. That's where it has to begin. I mean, with the, at least those of you who have small children, you know that, and discipline's not just a small children thing, but that's where it starts. And it has different features as the kids get older. But are you being disciplined? Anybody in here being disciplined? Better say yes, because we're going to get some. We continue to be disciplined. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to read through these Proverbs on under the biblical basis. I'm just going to read through them in the interest of time. And then we're not going to talk about them too much. I just kind of want to put them out there. And then we'll look at Ephesians 6:4, Colossians 3:21, and Hebrews 12. And not say too much about that right now, because we'll be coming back to some of them, referring back to them. Try to keep them in your mind as much as possible as we go through these, though. Proverbs is full of instruction about discipline. And you don't have to turn to each one, because I might take, you know, you're gonna, unless you got really, let the fingers do the walking, unless they go ahead and say, you can do that. But the iniquity, so this is 5:22-23. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for a lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he is led astray. Dies for a lack of discipline. 6:23. For the commandment is a lamp, and the teaching a light, and the reproofs of discipline are the way of life. Reproofs of discipline are the way of life. 13:24. 24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. We've got a couple of these passages that use the term rod, and we'll explain that in a bit. It's more than just what it sounds like. Proverbs 19:18. Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Tying the lack of discipline to death. Proverbs, let me skip in here. 20:11. Proverbs 20:11. Even a child makes himself known by his acts, by whether his conduct is pure and upright. And then we've got 22:6. You're familiar with this one. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. And then down in verse 15 of that chapter, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. 23. I'm using a new Bible here, so it's, pages are sticking together. So you can turn faster than I can, probably. Proverbs 23:13-14. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with a rod, you will save his soul from Sheol. That sounds kind of rough, but we'll come back to that. 29:15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. And then 17, discipline your son and he will give you rest. He will give delight to your heart. All right. So that word rod that popped up in here a few times, obviously the word discipline. There's a Old Testament, for what it's worth, definition down here, yasar, discipline, admonishment, instruction. So that word covers all of those kinds of ideas. Things that I think you know. It's basically educating the child, bringing him up, training him. And then in the New Testament passages we're going to read, paideia is education, training, nurture. So kind of the same thing. So let's look at really quickly at Ephesians 6:4. Isn't it kind of amazing at how few times that parents are actually addressed directly in the New Testament? much more so in the Old Testament. And not both parents, necessarily. I mean, fathers. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And compare that with something similar that Paul says in Colossians 3:21. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. So, what? Just quickly on those two passages, who's kind of the object here? Who's kind of getting the attention? What?
The
fathers to do. He's kind of protecting the kid, isn't he? I mean, it sounds like, you know, don't do that. Don't do this to the father. That's kind of the thing he emphasizes. Discipline, bring them up in discipline. That's what you are to do, but don't do this first. And then in Colossians 3:21, same thing. Don't do this. Be careful you don't do this. Now, we'll come back to these because some of the stuff I have on this page will kind of bring this back in. But it's just kind of interesting that there's some provoking going on, apparently, in Ephesus and Colossae, and he's trying to prevent that. Hebrews, last one here, Hebrews chapter 12. I'm going to start from verse 3 instead of 5, down through verse 12. Consider him who endured, you know who that is, right? Jesus, okay. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood, and you have forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him, for the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as it seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. There's another proverb quoted in this reading, and that's in the one up there in verse 5 and 6, and that's Proverbs 3, 11 and 12. Just taking this passage, just kind of a jumping off point into the rest of this, what's he saying? First place, why is he saying this in this particular book? Let's take a minute to talk about that. Those of you who studied Hebrews in the past, what's going on?
I think you had a situation where there was a group that were following the old law. They converted to Christianity, and then they were challenged in a lot of ways with physical and all kind of things, so they were slipping back into the, and I think the writer's trying to make the point that this is discipline, and exactly what he says, it seems bad now, but it's going to be for your own good.
Okay, yeah, they were under pressure, weren't they, for their faith. So he's not necessarily talking about discipline of fathers and mothers to their children here, but there's a lot of principles here we can draw from that. I feel like God really loves me because I feel chastised quite often when I'm reading the Bible. But it's interesting, isn't that a great point that he makes? That he loves us, and that's why he tells us these things. When we read things that are kind of hard to take, find kind of hard to apply, he's doing that because it's for our good. We can be sure of that. And I think that's a great lesson. And that's what we're doing with our kids, aren't we? We want to discipline them. It's for their good. A child without... Just kind of taking those proverbs all together, what would you say about a child without discipline?
Disgrace
of, to the parents, right? Yeah. One thing it makes.
Lost.
No, Hebrews says they're illegitimate.
Illegitimate children. If you have discipline, just like might as well be just kind of running out there on his own, right? You can't raise your children by remote control. Somebody else had a comment on that? What else? Fool, obviously. So you're not disciplined, you're raising a fool. So we don't want any little fools running around, or big fools, for that matter. So we want to discipline them. Okay. So I think a working definition that kind of encapsulates all that is to teach, train, correct with the aim of building committed, contented, and enthusiastic followers of Jesus. That's my working definition. So that's kind of where we're going. Jesus disciplined his disciples. If you look at the example, Jesus has the example that we're talking about on Sundays. Jesus disciplined his disciples. He taught them, corrected them, trained them through direct teaching, examples, stories, analogies, and firm correction. And I would add something to that. I thought about this as I was looking over this again. He taught them by experience. He kind of put them out. Remember when he sent them out two by two, and he sent the 70 out, and those sort of things. So he gave them some experiences. So the question here for you guys is, give an example or two of some of these methods. You can choose whatever you want. And if you have another one, you can choose that. But give me an example of teaching, either correction, analogies, example, stories. How did he do that?
Well, the rebuking of Peter.
Okay.
Was, I mean, it's the very first thing that came to my mind.
Right.
When he said, "Get behind me, Satan."
Yeah, right after he confessed Christ, that Jesus as Christ, the Son of God, just a few verses later, a few minutes later, if we're looking chronologically, he has to rebuke him because he didn't. He said, you're only thinking of the things of men, not the things of God. So yeah, that definitely rebuked him pretty sharply. Get behind me, Satan. I'm gonna, have you ever said that to your kid? You probably felt like it at times. You probably suspected that maybe that is Satan running around in there, but it's, probably never said that. I imagine. I don't know. Maybe. As a kid, have you heard that? Oh, I won't get into that. Okay, what else? What else we got? Oh, yes.
He compares. So he tells Martha to be more like her sister.
Okay. He used an example, kind of a teaching moment, right?
Yeah.
Because she's complaining. I don't know if he would have said anything to her if she hadn't complained. He said, "Mary, make her get up and help me with the dishes over here." And yeah, so that's good. Yeah. Seize the moment. There's a lesson for us, isn't there? You seize those teaching moments with our kids all the time, but try to make it a godly example, a godly lesson that we're bringing. I don't just something as I think I repeat two or three times in here. Don't just correct because it annoys you. That's such an important point that I think it pops in here a couple times. What else? And some of these, how else do you teach? There's a couple of
examples. Washing the disciples' feet.
Okay, yeah, I washed the feet of the disciples in John 13. We have that record. Rich, please.
Nope. In your working definition, one that leaps out at me is contented. Mm-hmm. And Jesus did that with his disciples through direct teaching. He kind of refocused them over and over on what was important and the mission and to not get wrapped up in what they left behind and what other people are doing.
Right. Yeah, very good. I knew I threw that in. I was hoping that, because we have talked about that in this class a little bit and how important that is, being contented. In fact, down here, if you look down under the ground rules, these are strictly my ground rules. Nothing sacred about them. But these are things I just thought of. That's why I left 8 for all you guys to fill in stuff. The number 5, model extraordinary contentment, especially during difficult times. I think we should model extraordinary contentment. And that's not always easy to do, but because we have a lot of stuff. We all have a lot of stuff. But we have to be, especially when times are hard, then we need to model that, I think. What else? Yes, Randy?
It's kind of broad, but when we look at all of the education, training, nurture, commitment, even contentment, enthusiasm. I think in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5 through 7, he actually covers every one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Probably considered, if not the most valuable teaching that has ever been delivered. It certainly, well, we all probably believe that it is.
Yeah.
Even the world that doesn't particularly embrace religion or godliness would say the moral teaching found in that section rivals almost anything that's
wholeheartedly. And he covers a lot of these things in there. It's certainly his direct teaching, but also he uses analogy in there. We use the house on the rock and the sand, stuff like that, the metaphors he uses. Dave?
I always think about the moment where he sent his disciples out in these pairs, and I've just always found that to be really interesting and really powerful. It's captured in several Gospels. Over in Luke 9, it says, he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal. He said to them, take nothing for your journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, no money. Do not even have two tunics, and where whatever house you enter, stay there, and from there depart. And wherever they do not receive you, when you leave that town, shake off the dust from your feet as a testimony against them. So I realize that's a really significant, you know, his disciples going out and proclaiming the kingdom from a parenting lesson that comes from that. I think that's an example of being willing to put your kids in a position of responsibility in something that's really important and really significant. And telling them what it's going to be like, and not making it easy, and but giving them the tools that they need, and kind of telling them, and you're gonna have some challenging situations, and you're gonna come across some people, and they're not gonna like you, right. And here's how you're gonna have to deal with that. So I found that to always be a really good example of kind of that on the job, real life, practical, applicable. I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to expect you to do this. You're prepared. You've been taught. You can go and handle this. It's not going to be easy. You need to travel light. You need to be smart and be responsible, and maybe even the idea of you go with somebody and work with them to do something that's really important and really significant and helpful and is a part of your spiritual growth.
Yeah. And the part in there about if your bike breaks in two, don't call me.
Call your mother.
Call your mother. Yeah. No, that's right. I mean, I think that's a perfect. And there were several. He ramped these up, of course, as he went through the experiences, right, that he was giving them, and they failed in a lot of cases, which is another example, right? I mean, you allow them to fail, and he did. I mean, they had to make choices that they didn't always make well.
I always thought it was interesting that he called out Judas. I mean, you know, said, like, one of you is going to betray me. And he called that out, and it just makes me wonder, you know, should we follow that example? But if we know something our children are doing, or we know one of them lied, do we call that out? Or, you know, I don't know, was he trying to get Judas to maybe fess up? Or, I don't know, just thought that was interesting.
That's an interesting question. And the application of that's kind of difficult. I mean, he knew something that none of the other disciples knew, of course, because they even asked questions of me. It's like, that's funny, huh? You know, it's like, I'm the one. But I don't know. We have to think about that. I think you do call out your kids, but he did it in front of everybody, but they didn't really get it because they didn't know all the thing. But he was, I don't know Jesus's motive. Maybe somebody else does. I don't know what his real motive there was, other than he was prophesying. It was a prophecy of something's going to happen. That's interesting. Yes, Rich?
To what Dave was talking about, when he sends them out to do these things, that is exactly what they've seen him do for a couple of years, right? Like, he's not telling them to do something they haven't seen. They've seen him go into a town and stay where he first was invited. And if he is rejected, I'm sure wipe the dust off his feet. And he, Jesus would only take minimal stuff, and he didn't accept money, and all those things. So I think it's easy for us to think, like, Jesus was in a church building talking to his disciples on Sunday morning, and then he sent them out two by two. But it's more like they've been going 13 at a time, and now you're going to go two at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. No, that's true. I mean, I have a picture of a bird kicking his little birdie, you know, birdie child out of the nest, you know, and he's just like a boot in the mouth nest, you know. And that's kind of, well, I mean, I've threatened the preacher trainees on several occasions I just, you know, just to come in one morning, you tell them you're preaching this morning. And I tried that with Zach. He just about had a heart attack. But it's sort of what, you know, it's not to throw them into the deep end of the pool kind of approach. And believe me, That was all the training I got. That's the way I got it. But that was, you know, there are times, I think, when you do that, you kind of just, okay, you're on your own. Go do this. You've seen me do it, now you do it. And they probably found out it was a lot harder than they thought. No question about that. And then not take anything with you. You know, this is completely off the subject, but if you look at all the different gospel accounts, he tells them to take different things, and it's Luke that where he tells them to take anything. And I think that has to do something with the audience of the particular gospel. But it's interesting in that's kind of the most extreme case. Don't take anything. Rely on the people who receive you to take care of you. Teaching them a lesson, too, about hospitality, even, you know, and which is really important in those days for strangers. So, yeah. Any others? What others do we have?
Did you think of Christy?
Or Peter. He gets it often.
Yeah, he does.
So in John, Peter, after Jesus is risen, Peter, seeing John, says, "Lord, what about this man?" And Jesus says, "If it's my will for him to remain till I come, what is that to you? Just follow me." Mm-hmm. Sometimes our kids are wanting to know what's going on with everybody else, and they lose sight of the task and their purpose, and they want to know about what everybody else is doing. Just don't do that. Just say, do what you're supposed to do. What is that to you?
Yeah.
So
that's the text for, you know, do it because I say so.
Yeah.
And there's a place for that sometimes. We all believe and understand. We want to explain to our kids the whys and whatever. But sometimes, you know, Jesus just told them to do stuff. And go do it. And there's a time for that. We've all, as parents, we know that because we've all done it. Right? You will if you haven't. You're going to tell them, you just expect them to carry out the command. And that's what Jesus did on occasion. They don't have to have all the whys and wherefores, because then I got to understand them sometimes anyway. Yeah, and then there's the parables. There's several occasions where Jesus got on the apostles, said, "Oh, you of little faith." He's talking to the apostles, the disciples. That they tried to. One man brings his son, who's having this fit, whether it's, you know, demon possessed or whatever. But they can't cast out the demon, and you know, they had the power to do it, but they couldn't do it. And so he brings them to Jesus. Jesus does it, and then. They said, "Why couldn't you?" They cast him out. Do you remember what Jesus said? This comes.
What? This is take prayer.
Yeah, prayer. This one comes out only by prayer. And in other words, they were relying on themselves to do that. So he before that he says, "Oh, faithless generation, how long am I with you?" I'm just like, he's like, I think from our standpoint, we'd be completely fed up and frustrated with them, because by this time, this is recorded in Mark 9, by this time they should have this. They should understand that they don't have the power to do it in themselves. And maybe there's a lesson for us too there, actually. We're doing this, we're parenting by the grace of God and through His help. And if we neglect His help, meaning the Word, the discipline of the Word, we're just not very smart. I mean, let's face it, it's right there for us. There are things for us to learn. And, you know, if we go off on our own and we wonder what happened to our kids, well, you know, it's predictable. It's predictable. What was the result? I have this down here, the result in the middle. Passionate followers of Jesus who are willing to suffer him. That's the result. You have passionate followers of Jesus who are willing to suffer for him, and they did. So they were willing to go. We sometimes say to go to the mat for somebody. They're willing to go to crosses and to the, you know, be beheaded for him and all kinds of persecution and trials. And they did that. That's what his teaching did for his disciples once they understood what was going on. Jesus' aim was not rote obedience or just behavior modification. What was it then? It kind of comes back to what we started with, right?
Character.
Character. I like that's a good word to plug in there. Character, the character of Christ, right? Take on the character of Christ. That's what we want. We don't want that to be our second nature. We want that to be our first nature. to take on the character of Christ should be who we are, what we're striving to be. Paul said, imitate me as I imitate Christ. He wasn't telling them to imitate him and stop there. It'd be only in the sense that I imitate Christ and you imitate me. So yeah, that's what his aim was. He said he would draw all people to himself through, when he lifted up on the cross. Who are we drawing? Who do we really want to draw our kids to? Christ, right? We want to draw them to the cross, not just to us. We're not just looking for loyalty to the parents. We want them to be loyal to Christ. That's the goal here. And passionate loyalists to Christ, not just kind of sitting on the pew, on the back pew. Whether they're sitting on the front pew, they can still be sitting on the back pew, right? Sit on the front pew and sit there and, you know, have this kind of thing. So we're not talking about physical pews. Okay, any questions so far or thoughts or any of that? Anything you want to say? That wasn't him. Yes, sir. Jay.
You were talking about Mark 9 and they should have known by then. I think in parenting, just like everything else, I might know better, but then I've kind of forgotten or I've let in my frustration. I'm tired. And then, so I can see them, you know, doing it right and then eventually forgetting.
Oh, yeah.
I think we can do that with possessions. We can be like, oh, yeah, thank you, God, for giving me this job. Thank you for this. And before you know it, it's like, look where I got myself, you know, like the things that I have. And I see that with parenting where I'll forget. Be patient with this beautiful child that God gave you.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. I mean, we do forget that way. The disciples were with Jesus for 3.5 years or so, 3+ years. They were with him in the flesh. And it took them every bit of that to get that. Right? I mean, they were not, they kept failing even toward the end. I mean, at the end, they were all, you know, they're going to go with him. And Thomas even, he says, let's go to Jerusalem and die with him. You see that in John 11, what happens in John 20? I will not believe, he says. I won't believe. So he was courageous, but flawed, and we all are flawed. So we're not talking about perfect parenting here. That's the goal, of course, but that's not what we are. And nor shall we be. Okay, ground rules. I'm just going to go through these because these are just some things I thought of. Got 5 minutes. Let's just talk about them, and then when we run out of time, we'll run out of time. Do not allow your children to get their dipper in your bucket. What does that mean? I use this term a lot. I find I'm using this little saying a lot. What does it mean? Heather?
Don't let them push the button.
Don't let them push your butt.
Don't let them take you to that spot.
Yeah. Do you let that happen sometimes?
Absolutely.
And what does it do when they get their dipper in your bucket? When they get into your, I think the saying, one saying goes now, and I think I got it right, but they live rent-free in your head, you know, right? They're taking up residence in there, even though they're all doing whatever they're doing, and they don't care about you. They're not thinking about you and how you feel. But you're just like this all the time. I like to get their dipper in your bucket, and because it's, I heard somebody say that, obviously, sometime, and it's just like, don't let them do that as much as possible. How do you not let them do that? What's the steps you take? What do you do to keep them from doing that?
Tell them to run. Yes, go show them now. I close the door.
Yeah, tell them. Yeah, save yourself from this generation. Go. Yeah, okay, well, that's one way.
My life. I ran.
You see, she's still here.
Because I ran.
And Dave is still, he's here. He's still living. And it's amazing.
I've often told my kids that they will never out-stubborn me. And I say that to try to convince them, but also to tell myself that I have to stay on top of that and not, you know, get lazy and give up, which of course I do, happens, but that's the overall goal. So it's kind of like disciplining both of us at the same time, but just to keep convincing them, that kind of thing, because they are endless, at least my voice, at a test and test and test and test.
Children discipline you sometimes, right?
They try.
Yeah, they try.
I think our own buttons are easier for our kids to see than they are for us, and so your spouse can help a lot here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can see when Amy's getting her buttons pushed, and she can see when I'm getting mine pushed.
Yeah, right.
Obviously not in front of kids, but later to explain that and say, all right, you know he was working you.
Yeah. No, right. Very true.
Or when your spouse has to say, okay, you need to go in the other room.
Well, I, you know, you do. I mean, that what irritated me most is when the kid's getting onto her, you know, and I'm in another room. They're not talking to me or bothering me, but directly. But when they're bothering her, and that I got more upset than she did sometimes with that, because I knew what they were doing, and vice versa, you know, she knew when they're doing it with me, they knew how they could do that. So you discipline your children instead of doing all this hand-wringing stuff that you say, well, maybe just that's what discipline is about. Is about calling them out, at least in those times, when they're doing that kind of stuff, when they're trying to get into you. And they do learn, because that's all they do for 24 hours a day. They are trying to, they're like prisoners who are trying to figure out how to escape and how to become independent. And they're thinking about it all the time. And I'm telling you, this is the truth. This is what they do. So... just be aware. And the second one maybe is like the first here. Don't be, I think we got a minute or so. Do not be afraid of your children. Don't let them intimidate you. I'll just tell this quick story. When Angie was very young, I don't know, 2 or 3 years old, and Dave was 4 or 5, whatever he was, the church there had this video series they were going to do. And so they kind of had a room like this, and we went in there, parents and stuff, and they started this video. And the first thing they talked about was how parents are afraid and all this stuff. And Chris and I just got up and walked out. I didn't want any part of that. Because I thought I didn't relate to that at all. And I don't know what the rest of the video was about. It was probably pretty good. Probably could have used it. But I didn't like that approach. I didn't like that approach. We can't be afraid of our children. They will try to, they'll throw stuff out there just to try to get you to respond in their way. That's what they'll do. And so, okay, so we'll pick up from there. Thanks.